Speaking of Reliability, a podcast with good friends talking with you about reliability engineering topics. Let's discuss how to create and improve your reliability program and your career. All right, welcome to Speaking of Reliability. This is Fred Schenkelberg, and I hear Adam quickly typing out a reminder email to me in the background. Yep. But hey, Adam.
Hey, Fred.
We were just talking about reliability plans, and it reminded me of our last episode, is where if you're new into a company and building a program and a plan from scratch, is, you know, some of the issues that can surround that around credibility and just getting started and building a, being successful at that endeavor. One of the steps is to create a plan to help the rest of the organization understand, how do we achieve this vision of a reliable product at the end of the process? And a plan isn't just in a new situation or in a new program. It's a product comes out of concept phase, and they put together a team to design and build this new product. One of those steps is to, what do we need to do for reliability? You know, how are we going to achieve the reliability objectives for the program? And if you're in that situation, you may be asked to create a plan to supplement the overall development plan. Now, Adam, I'm sure you've done this a few times. How many different industries have you built plans?
Oh, a lot. I mean, I can list semiconductor, medical, robotics, imaging systems. It goes definitely a lot. And it's interesting. I think one of the things that definitely initially categorizes what type of plan it's going to be is where the product is in the development process. Is it an entirely new product with no predecessor? Mm-hmm. Is it a next generation with a lot of feature adds? Or is it a next generation specifically for the purpose of dealing with previous, you know, issues in the field? Mm-hmm. That's going to have a lot to do with the structure of the plan.
Well, I also would add another dimension that influences how your plan develops. Is it a SpaceX rocket system where you're not going to get 100 of them to go test, right? Mm-hmm. Or, you know, or is it a passenger vehicle or a medical device used in surgery? So if something goes wrong, somebody gets hurt, basically, or killed. Or is it a consumer product, say a game system accessory, or is it a toy for the Christmas market, for the holiday market? Yep. You know, sometimes you get tons and tons of samples, but you have no time. And other times, other situations, you're going to have 3 years or more, but you don't get any samples.
Right.
I think there's yet another dimension, a third dimension to add to it is, well, what's the company's skill set? You know, is statistics a scary system or term that nobody does data collection and analysis? Or are they all high-end modelers using high zoots system models and finite element analysis and looking at the effects of reliability over time using physics of failure models? So yep. Where's the organization? What can we build on? So I'm thinking those are at least three, and there's probably more dimensions.
Well, it has to be, without a doubt, a prescription that's executable, you know, so it can't, because you could just grab, you know, out of a book, generic activities to do, general list of reliability tools. But the idea with the plan is that it's executable, right? So, of course, it would have to account for the skill set and capabilities of not just the company, but any resources they have access to outside.
Mm-hmm. Well, I don't know how many times I've seen the Mill Handbook 7, I think it was 785, that lists all kinds of different reliability activities. And that was put into the contract for this military product, that's what they needed to do. Everything mm-hmm. in the book.
Right. That's just, yeah, exactly. Like that's not helpful.
Not helpful. And Carl talks about it, and I think he talked about it a couple of times on the Speaking of Reliability, is that his first time he was put in a position where he was asked to create a reliability plan, he went out and found every single reliability tool or activity he could think of and find a reference to and put it all in the plan. And he presented it, and it was just crickets. They're all looking at him like, are you crazy?
Right.
What are you trying to accomplish here? So yeah. I think it has to be executable. It also has to be connected to questions that the team has to answer. So I know the first time I was asked to put together a reliability plan, the program manager sat me down and says, at the end of this process, we have a final design review. And I need to be able to say to the rest of the team and to the senior managers and to our potential customers that we're on target to hit our reliability goals, or we have hit our reliability targets. And it says, and it becomes real because the finance group is listening to that and saying, if our failure rate is not close to what we think it's going to be, that costs us a lot of money one way or the other. If we're better than we thought or worse than we thought, it hits the financials. And so I was like, wow, it's pretty serious. And so he said, make sure that we can answer that question. And then we started talking about all the constraints. You know, I had so many months to do this and we could get these many samples. And his next question is, well, what budget do we need? How many samples are we going to need to do testing? Mm-hmm. I don't know. Won't we put a placeholder in there and let's take steps earlier in the plan to figure out what we need to test. We're not going to test in reliability. Let's focus where we're working here. And he was like, well, that makes sense. All right. And so it became a real discussion and with a set of milestones in the plan to reassess what exactly we need to do next. Mm-hmm. But the budget process and for his planning, for getting prototypes even, for testing, those are long lead time things. So the technique we used in that circumstance is we just set in placeholders to saying, oh, well, if we don't use those 50, if we don't determine we need to use those 50 samples, we don't build them, right? Or we build them for other purposes. And so we did stuff like that to sort out a structure of, well, what are we trying to accomplish by when, and then what are the constraints? And then that helped us to shape the overall program.
But that's everything, right? That's the constraints is everything, because that is what shapes it. Because otherwise you can just go grab a textbook and do everything in the textbook if you didn't have constraints. So that's the thing. That's really why they're coming to you. They're like, you know, we can go read the book, but we don't know which ones of these are really going to help us with where we're at, what we're trying to get to, and what's most important right now. That's where we need you to tell us which tools are the ones we should do first.
Mm-hmm. And what I found in some circumstances, like in the one with this program manager, he had a real clear idea. Says, I need to know that it's 98% reliable for 1 year when we launch, because it's a relatively high volume product and we just can't afford warranty costs that support a higher failure rate. And so that became very, very clear that it was really at getting a good system model and estimate and set of measurements for that. Where in other cases, the program manager may not really know what they want. And so it's more of a give and take and back and forth to figure out, well, what questions are you or the rest of the team trying to answer?
Yeah.
I had one case where the team all knew what the goal was, but nobody knew what to do with it. And so the early on tasks were just creating a structure so they can interpret what the goal was for their particular area. So something like a reliability block diagram and an apportionment model was really all they needed to get started.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I mean, that's something I've seen, too, where people are throwing a lot of energy at the activities, but it's a little bit aimless because they don't know what their goal is. And you ask them, you know, what's their goal? And they might even have some number that everybody's throwing around. Mm-hmm. And A, sometimes people don't even know what that number means, or B, they know what it means, but they don't know where it came from. And it's not tied to anything with regard to the business or the market or the customers or you know, the way they want the product to actually perform. So when it's not tied to something, it becomes very negotiable, right? So you're doing this test. It doesn't meet the goal. So
change the goal.
Exactly, right? Because, you know, if nobody can argue why the goal is the goal, why are you going to delay the release by 6 months? And time to market, they know, is very important. So,
the marketing guys are going to tell you, we're going to lose $100,000 in profit every day we don't ship.
And they're right. And they're absolutely right. So you better be able to explain how this reliability issue is going to cost you $2 million. And that's why you should delay by 2 months, you know?
Right.
And so if you haven't already made that connection with the market and the performance and the effects, then yeah, you know, so that's, sometimes it is that simple, is that just to get all their attention directed towards creating a goal that's meaningful and tied to the business objectives.
Mm-hmm. And I think other parts of the plan include either building on the infrastructure you have or improving it so that you become more proactive. And if you're in a reactive organization or in a brand new organization, new reliability program, how do you avoid responding to problems? How do you avoid problems? I think it comes with the role of reliability engineers that we're often teaching and training. So one would be, why do we need a goal? And here's how it connects to the business. And here's what we can do about achieving that goal and connecting it back to the business and all those things. But it's also, here's why I need those numbers. Here's why we need to put this in the contract. Here's the consequence of doing these activities that help us along the way. We end up being coaches and trainers a lot of times.
Oh, definitely. Well, that's kind of what the plan's about, right? It's a documenting some coaching. In a sense, right? You've assessed, you're providing input, which is what a coach does. They assess you and then provide input. And, you know, here it is in a documented form for when you're not there to deliver this information directly.
That's true. And one of the things I've run into, and this, he was actually a really bright, really smart reliability engineer. And he worked up in Idaho at a product development company. And everything that was done that had even the smell of reliability associated with it, he did. He was the only one that did it. He did everything. He set the goal. He created the plan. He executed all the tests. He interpreted all the data. When it came around to reliability, and his name was Muhammad did it. Sally's doing that. She does the reliability stuff. She doesn't bother us. You know, we're the design team. We don't do that.
Yeah,
kind of thing. And obviously, what Muhammad did, and what a Sally or whoever would be in that position when I've run into it, is they rolled up their sleeves and did all this stuff. They did the derating calculations and then worked back with the electrical engineers to select the right components, rather than the electrical engineer doing that. If a procurement team had a problem with a component failing in a prototype, they'd hand it off to the reliability engineer to go do failure analysis, troubleshoot it with the vendor, and find the right solution, rather than the procurement engineer or the development engineers getting involved. And so these poor folks, I've run into a few of them over the years, that they just get run ragged. And they're doing everything.
Yep.
And it might actually be a really successful program. They actually make a difference in achieving good, reliable targets. But when they walk out the door, the program goes with them.
Yeah. And it's so much, it being implemented is so much less effective when it's not, right? So this work that used to be electrical engineers, if the electrical engineers aren't participating in it, next time it's not going to be designed in, right? Again, it's going to be this external person evaluating and changing it, which is so much less effective than having it be there in the beginning.
That's right. It's akin to throwing it over the wall, essentially. Right. So yeah, I heard it actually phrased that way in one organization, is that we do the design and then we hand it off to the reliability group and they do the reliability stuff.
Right. Yeah, right. It's crazy. That
really?
Is like,
no.
Yeah. Yep.
But some of it is the plan is, yeah, it's bringing our expertise is when do we need to do a model, or here's the physics of failure analysis. Here's what we know about failure mechanisms. Here's the right set of questions to ask as we go through the program. And here's tools and techniques to help us answer those. So I think keeping that in mind is a good way to build a custom plan for a particular organization. The hard part is that you get into a situation where you have no time, right? You've demonstrated that you're successful a little bit. You're the reliability person to go to. And they say, oh, we want you to take on one more program. Please have a reliability plan ready for tomorrow's kickoff meeting. It's like, no.
not happening. Yeah.
Yeah. And in worst case, or in some cases, I've seen where people will take the last program's plan and say, all right, here's a draft. We'll edit it as we go. But once you get busy, it's really tough to edit those plans to go back to. You got to build it in to some extent that you're going to leave it flexible.
Yeah.
But so building a plan from scratch is have a vision, understand the constraints, right? And then it has to be connected to your business and helping the team answer questions that they need to answer. It's not questions that we need to answer. I once spent a whole month calibrating a bunch of thermal chambers because they were 10 degree C difference from one corner to the other one, and completely missed the deadline to have the test done.
Right.
So
right.
It was worthless at that point.
Exactly. Exactly. It happens. It's easy. It's amazing how easy it is to lose focus like that.
Wow. It was fun. I learned a lot about thermocouples and
thermal chambers,
but that didn't help. So anyway, 785 is a Mill Handbook 785 and some other standards and books list all kinds of cool things you can do. There's a danger in that, though.
Well, that's the thing, right? It's the if it's going to get turned down, like you said. You know, you gave an example of somebody who just threw the whole kitchen sink in there.
Well, I'll blame Carl for that story. That was
exactly. But I mean, imagine going to your doctor and with a specific problem, and he just starts reading out of a medical book everything you can possibly do to improve your health. You're just going to be like, "Are you kidding? You know, I need to know something. I need to know one thing very specifically I can do right now to help. What's the thing you advise?" Right? That's the.
Well, that's a good analogy.
Yeah, I always try to take, you know, that doctor mindset, because that's kind of the same thing. You know, if, like I said, it matters what the situation is. If it's a new product development, that's one situation. But if it's one where, hey, you know, we're doing a whole product redesign because we've had a lot of issues, that's more of that doctor scenario where a patient's coming in and saying, hey, I have problems. Can you please advise what I can do? What's your prescription? You know,
that's my knee hurts. And so why are you looking in my ears?
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. I don't need to know how to take more. I don't want to take more vitamins just because you think I should. And, you know, it's, yeah.
Well, it seems to be part of the script, though, is, you know, exercise more, smoke less, you know.
Right. But how do you feel when you walk out of the office and that's what he told you? You're like, seriously, I didn't even want to, you know, I'm like, you didn't earn your copay, buddy. You know,
well, like it's, that's right.
I could go to WebMD for free and gotten the same advice, you know.
That's right. That's right. And which vitamins to take for my knee.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah. No, that's a good analogy, though. It's what's your prescription? If you think of it that way, sometimes the prescription is, well, we need to find out more. We need to discover what the issues are. We need to research what the constraints are. And so I think that's a good analogy. Yeah, we should probably work on that one. It'd probably be good. Cool. Well, let's wrap it up there. I think the idea of building a plan is there's a strong desire, and I know I felt it over the years, is that there's got to be a template or a standard that we can just apply and adapt, tweak it here and there, and we're good. Of all the plans I've built, and sounds the same with you, Adam, is that each one is different. There's too many dimensions that pull and push your plans to take different shapes. Sometimes the goal is given by contract. Sometimes it doesn't exist anywhere in the business. And so the plan to establish a goal or to use a goal already starts taking many different forms depending on your particular circumstance. And then it just gets more complicated as the more tools you start considering. Is, does it fit or not? Is it appropriate? Is it going to help? So let us know what your experience is. What kind of plans have you put together? What kind of challenges have you faced? Any particulars that you'd like us to talk about on the show? You know, join the conversation, as I've been saying in many of our episodes, is head over to reliability.fm and look for the Speaking of Reliability show. There's comments fields, and you can use iTunes to do a rating and review. We'd love to hear from you to help us shape the show and the episodes and the topics we talk about to things that are top of mind for you that will help you the most. So let us know. So with that, Adam, got any plans, no pun intended, for the coming weekend?
Well, tonight I'm taking off on a couple hour drive for some work I'm doing with a robotics company tomorrow that they're local, but not that local.
Okay.
And then this weekend, hoping to actually go a little bit farther up north and see some of the beautiful foliage in the mountains.
Oh, so, that's right. Yeah. You're kind of, 4 or 5 hours from the Vermont and New Hampshire. Yep. Maine mountains.
Oh yeah, actually like 2.5 hours. And but the funny thing is, we took a little bit of a too casual attitude towards it and didn't book any hotels or B&Bs up there yet, kind of thinking, oh, we'll do it. Yeah. You know where that story's now. We're calling friends, we're like, is your condo open? Can we borrow?
can we swing by? You have a couch open?
Is your ski condo? Because we're like, you're probably not using your ski condo right now, are you? Like, so
yeah, that people come from all over the world to view the, I heard it's called the Leaf Peepers.
Leaf Peepers, exactly. Yeah. And it is beautiful. I mean, even just driving around here in Massachusetts, it's really pretty.
Yeah. Now, see, the redwoods just don't get pretty where I'm at. We just get the redwood duff. They shed a bunch of foliage, but they're still green. They're still massive trees and still green, but we get all of this raining dead leaf. Redwood leaves are really small and brittle. So we blowing off the decks and the walkways and stuff. You start your car, you have to run the windshield wipers to get all the redwood stuff off of it.
Keep it going.
That's fall for us, as things are falling out of the trees, but they're not pretty colors. So anyway, we'll enjoy. Have a great time. Hope the plan works out for you.
Yeah.
And next year you should change your plan to include reservations.
Yes.
That might be good.
Yes. Noted.
All right. Well, thanks, Adam. We'll talk to you later.
Take care. Bye.
Thanks for listening to Speaking of Reliability. We invite you to join the conversation if you have a question or a topic that you think we should discuss in a future show. Please let us know. You can find a comment box below the episode show notes, or just leave a note as part of a review on iTunes.